hell that I was in, I'd do anything to be better.
I thought like a lunatic.
You kind of just have like that little bit of hope that it will get better.
You're gonna make it.
This began my surrender.
I am a witness of my own growth.
It's a life beyond your wildest dreams, and I just have to say, it works if you work it.
My story, that's what I share.
You're listening to Far From Finished, a weekly podcast where we share new, real-life stories of hope and triumph, told by the people who live them. Today's story comes to us from...
I'm Tyler. I'm an addict. I'm from Dallas, Texas. My clean date is March 17th, 2017. A little bit about my childhood. I was born on the Keesler Air Force Base, so I was a military brat. You know, I was raised, you don't cry, you don't show emotions. You know, if you have something wrong with you, you go away by yourself. You don't tell anyone. Don't tell anyone your feelings. I was raised mainly by my grandparents. My dad was in and out of my life. Not much, though, just for, you know, a couple months here and there, but it was years apart. My mom was in my life, but, you know, she was working all the time or she was with her boyfriend. I really didn't see her much. My grandma was the one who would take me to school every day, all the way till high school. You know, my grandpa was the one who'd give me money. My grandma would, you know, tell me to go to bed at night. My grandma was the one who cooked for me. You know, they did everything for me. So I had a, you know, a fairly decent childhood with, you know, being taken care of, but not parents-wise. I had my first drink when I was 14 years old. It was at a family reunion type thing. I got it from my aunt. And since then, you know, each family reunion, I would get to drink. Well, I always wanted to go to my aunt's house all the time because whenever I would go over there, I knew I would get to drink. Then I believe I was 15 years old and my aunt's mom, so my grandma, she gave me my first muscle relaxer. And, you know, I was only 15. I remember, you know, she gave it to me and I took it. And ever since then, I was done. I was hooked. Whenever I was in high school, I had a shoulder reconstruction surgery. And so I always had hydrocodones. I tore ligaments in my knees, broke my ankles. So I was always going to the orthopedic surgeon getting hydrocodones. Well, I took them every single day before school, my freshman year of high school and my sophomore year. And I remember one time my sophomore year, I was walking back from my like first period class and I just fell to the floor. I had taken too many that day and one of my friends had to carry me outside and drive me home. Parents never knew about that, none of that. I started dating this guy. His name was Hunter. Me and him, you know, he was 3 years older than me. And so all we ever did was party. We partied 24/7. You know, I didn't have a curfew, didn't have any of that. I was a straight A student, you know, for every year I was in school. So no one ever really thought that I'd be going down a bad path. But as soon as me and Hunter started dating, that was when my drinking went over the edge. That was the first time I smoked weed was when I was 16. And then I was constantly smoking weed and I didn't even like it. And so we were partying, drinking all the time. Then I started smoking cigarettes. All of our friends, you know, pushed pills, pushed alcohol, you know, meth, heroin, everything. And I hadn't done any of that yet. And whenever I was 17, I was still dating Hunter, and my best friend, Tiffany, she was the one who did coke all the time. She always asked me if I wanted to try it, and I said no. It's like, no, 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 no. So I finally did it. I remember the first time I did it, like it was yesterday. We were at a party. Me, her, and another girl went upstairs to the bathroom, and she crushed up a line for me. And I looked at her and I said, are you sure I can do it? Am I going to be okay? Like, is it good? How does it feel? She was like, you're going to be totally fine. Like, no big deal. And I did it. And since then, I was hooked on coke. I quit taking hydrocodones because I realized I like uppers more. Then, you know, I did Adderall after I did coke. Me and Hunter would do Adderall constantly. We had what we called Adderall nights. And we would get a hotel, you know, cheap hotel at like Motel 6 or whatever. And we would stay up all night. You know, we'd have a deck of cards. We'd play goldfish, you know, all that stuff. We'd drink beer all night. Would have friends over at the hotel and just constantly take Adderall. And once we ran out, we looked at our phones and hit everybody up that we knew. Like people who didn't even do Adderall, we hit them up to see if they knew someone else who had Adderall. And that lasted for months. I mean, months. And, you know, then I got my first car, and that's what instantly started me drinking and driving. I did not care. I couldn't care less. Nothing mattered to me. Then a few months later, I eventually tried to overdose on pills. I was prescribed narcotics for migraines, depression, anxiety medicine, you name it, all of it. I had those problems. And I was in my bathroom and I took everything I possibly could. And I remember I woke up in my own vomit. No one found me, parents, grandparents, no one found me. I was laying there for I don't even know how long. Woke up in my own vomit, cleaned it up, went to bed. It didn't mean anything to me. It didn't make me stop, didn't push me down. I just kept going. Next day, we went out and partied again. It was no big deal. To me, that stuff was just normal. But I don't know why it was normal to me, because I am the only addict and the only alcoholic, the only one with mental illnesses in my entire family, mom's side, dad's side, all generations. So I don't know why it was normal to me. None of my friends at the time had overdosed. You know, there was none of my friends at the time were trying to commit suicide. So I don't know why I was thinking it was normal, but it just felt completely okay to me. So after I had tried to overdose, the next day, you know, Hunter called me, texted me, everything was good. Life was back to normal. You know, we continued partying. We had one of our best friends, Greg. He had a duplex, and that's where everyone went every single day. Cookouts, you know, you drink till you pass out. All of our friends did that, beer pong all night. There weren't really any drugs around there besides weed and K2. And that was just a normal thing every day. I didn't have a curfew, so I could do whatever I wanted. I was still going to school whenever I was in high school. I was going to school every single day, still had straight A's. So to me, it didn't seem like a problem. I was what they call a functioning addict alcoholic, you know? I didn't have a job. I never had to work, so it wasn't a big deal to me. I was getting my stuff done that I needed to get done. You know, we were at Greg's every day, and then one time Hunter had to go to Alpine for his cousin's graduation, and he had an F-250, and he left his truck with me. And we went over to Greg's house, me and Corbin, who was Hunter's best friend, and, you know, Hunter kept telling me, you know, he's like, whatever you do, you know, just don't smoke K2, you know, don't smoke what Corbin has, like it's, you know, it'll knock you down. I was like, okay, you know, I won't, babe, you know, I won't do that. Well, we get to the party, I'm drunk as could possibly be. Corbin goes out to smoke and he says, Tyler, you wanna come hit this? I instantly say, yeah. And I'm standing on the side of Corbin's truck, you know, leaning in the window. I hit it, instantly fell straight to the ground. I don't remember what happened. Nolan, actually, they had a wheelchair at the duplex. Nolan brought a wheelchair over there and poured water on my face, you know, wheeled me back into the house. Next thing I know, I wake up hugging a toilet with Corbin sitting on the bathroom floor with me, covered in my own vomit yet again. And that was so normal to me, you know, stayed the night at Greg's house, woke up the next day, drove Hunter's truck back to his house. You know, told him what happened, and he laughed. You know, he said, I told you not to hit it, babe. You know, and I was like, I know, you were right. But, you know, because nothing was taken seriously. So it just wasn't a big deal. From there, you know, I hated K2. I would never touch K2. And then, you know, we'd be sitting at Hunter's grandma's house, you know, because we'd have to watch the house. And then, you know, one day he asked me if I wanted it again, and I was like, yeah. You know, so I did it. You know, we were watching The Dictator and, you know, made it even funnier. And then I didn't touch K2 again after that. So I graduated high school in 2013. I graduated a year early. I was working for my mom as a secretary at this time. I was 17, 18. And I was looking at colleges. And, you know, Hunter had just moved to Missouri probably a couple weeks prior because he got a job for the railroad out there. And so my mom was, you know, she was like, why don't you look at colleges in Missouri? And I was like, oh, you know, because I didn't even think about that. So I looked him up, you know, applied, got accepted. And next thing you know, I'm moving to Missouri. I get there. Everything's good. You know, like me and Hunter are living together. We have our own house. We have, you know, new vehicles, everything. He was paying for everything, you know, everything a girl could ever ask for. And then at this time, whenever I moved there, I started working out heavily. I was eating right. I was doing, you know, on a healthy diet, all that. You know, I've changed addictions, you know, to working out from drinking. And I ended up with 8 months clean. I joined a sorority up there. And then Hunter was texting me one night. He was saying some really weird things. So one of my sorority sisters was like, you want to go check on him? I was like, no, we're good. She was like, no, let's go check on him. We get to the house and we look in the trash can. Every bit of alcohol that we had in the house was in that trash can because he drank it all. I go into my room. He has empty pill bottles laying around everywhere, my pills and his pills. And then he walks by us, doesn't even look at us, walks out the front door, walks back in, walks to mine and his bedroom. Walks back out, doesn't even look at us again, then walks back in, goes straight back out the patio. So I walk out there and I said, Hunter, what's going on? Like, are you okay? And he's sitting in the fetal position with a gun. He points it at me. It misfired. A bullet just fell out. I sprinted into the kitchen. I tackled one of my sorority sisters into the stove. And he walks back in, puts the gun on the counter with a bullet right next to it. I tried following him around, you know, to check on him. So that's what, you know, that's what we do. And he punched the side of his house, shattered his entire hand, had to get plates in it. That night, he left bruises on me, marks on me. And I moved out the next day. The next day, started drinking again. That's what caused my relapse. And I was on a binge. I was 18 at this time. I'm 21 now, and that drinking binge had not left. So I moved into the sorority house, stayed there for 7 months, moved back to Texas, and I was dating this new guy. He sold meth. He's like, you want to try it? I was like, no, I'm never going to do that. Next day, he said, you want to try it? I was like, yeah. And he was like, you want to smoke it? I was like, no, I like snorting things. So he lays out a big line for me, and I snort it right then and there. I'm hooked, doing, you know, 8 to 12 lines a day. Then I finally started smoking it. Couldn't quit. I loved it. I moved in with him, and then moved in with him for about 2 months, then moved back into my mom's house. I got a job at a bar. I loved my job. It was, you know, you had to interact with your customers, you know, so smoking meth, you know, and going to work at a bar where you have to interact with people, it went hand in hand for me. You know, and then we could get drunk at work. So I was to the point of I was drunk every single day, all day, driving drunk home. I lived an hour away from work, smoking meth, you know. I would smoke meth, you know, and then be like, call my boss, hey, I'm going to be 15 minutes late. Turned into, hey, I'm going to be an hour late, because I just kept saying one more hit before I left, one more, you know. And then finally, I knew I needed to quit, but I couldn't. My life was consumed by it. And January 29th, 2017, one of my best friends died. From an overdose. It was from this disease. And it sent me down an even worse path because I was trying to cope with it. It got to the point of, you know, I wouldn't hang out with people. You know, I was doing meth every day, all day. I didn't want to hang out with people because I knew, oh, well, if I'm gone from my house for 2 hours, that's 2 hours I can't do meth. So kept doing it. Then one night I was driving home and I was drunk as could possibly be. I couldn't see the road and I was bawling my eyes out. And I get home and I barf all over my bedroom floor. And I went and woke my mom up and I just showed her all my meth, my pipes, everything. You know, had some coke hidden, showed her that too, all my pills, everything. And she looks at me and she says, "So what do you expect me to do about that?" And I was hyperventilating, you know, couldn't breathe. Then I finally got the words out, "I need help." She called American Addiction Center, and the next day, about 14 hours from then, I was on a flight to Vegas for rehab. I went to Desert Hope. I slept for 6 days straight, so I don't even know when the last time I got sleep was. I detoxed for 10 days. You know, they were giving me all these, you know, all these meds, and I didn't know what was going on. My brain wasn't functioning right. I wouldn't talk to anyone. I was terrified. I mean, every time I would look around, I would sit here and say, you know, "I don't belong here. Like, this isn't even me. I don't have a problem." I was in inpatient for 34 days, and those 34 days I am entirely grateful for because I learned so much about myself. I learned who I am today. I learned why I went to those things. I learned why I relapsed. I learned how to think straight. And I remember looking over at someone and looking at them and saying, "It is so weird to be thinking in a sober manner," because it was so different. Like, I was paying attention to the sky, you know, to nature. When I was in my active addiction, I probably couldn't even tell you that the sky was blue, even though I knew the sky was blue. You know, you don't pay attention to those things. And I made real friendships, you know, got close to people who were going through the same thing as me, understanding it. So after those 34 days, the only reason I wanted to get out of inpatient was because I wanted to go to the airport and get a beer. I wanted to fly home and get a sack of dope. That was the only thing I was thinking about. I didn't want to get better. I just wanted to leave there and go get the next one. My last week of inpatient, I decided I wanted to go to intensive outpatient because all my friends were going there. So I was like, okay, I'll try it, you know. Went to outpatient. I dealt with a lot of things in outpatient, you know, arguments with my mom, with friends. And then a girl in my house, in my apartment there, did heroin in the apartment. And that tore me apart. I was hyperventilating. I didn't know what to do. But first thing I did was I called my dad. And, you know, he talked to me. We mended our relationship. And then another thing, a girl in my apartment, I caught her stealing my pills. You know, and it's that just right there showed me, you know, you're constantly going to be around it. An outpatient, the instructors I had here, they were amazing. I kept getting irritated, you know, by things being said over and over and over again. But then I realized, you know, they're repeating these things because it needs to be drilled into our heads. And then my last week of outpatient, I said, "I'm going straight home. That's it." 4 days before I got out of outpatient, I decided that I did want to get better. I'm only 21, and I have a chance to change my life around. And so I knew that if I were to go back to Texas, I'd go back to the same type of job, same type of friends, because I loved it. And I decided I didn't want to do that. So I stayed out here in Vegas, and I moved into a sober living house. There are 12 women in the house, and I absolutely love it. I had my first sponsor, who was an AA sponsor, and, you know, she was wonderful. We got along really well. I was going to meetings constantly, CMA, AA, HA, CA, NA, anything. Any A, I was going to it because I wanted to find my home. my AA sponsor, she was the only one I was drawn to. That's why I asked her to be my sponsor. And I realized though, me and her are so much alike and we couldn't take things seriously. So my house manager actually took me to an NA cookout, pool party function thing. And I met this woman named Michelle. Me and her instantly clicked. You know, we were talking about life, talking about, you know, everything that was going on. And she made me promise her things that, you know, no one else made me promise. And, you know, she was such an amazing example for me because that day that we were at that function, her daughter had died 10 months ago. And she was there. And that's how I knew I wanted a new sponsor, because I wanted someone like that. And I asked her to be my sponsor. And instantly, my life was turned around. I went from hanging out with newcomers, you know, my friends from rehab, you know, watching relapse after relapse, my best friend relapse, you know, I was going right down that path if I didn't change, if I didn't hang around with people with multiple years. And all the relapses, you know, they broke my heart. But the only advice I got was to cut them out of my life, otherwise I'll be right there next to them. And I did that. And I started going to different meetings, branching out. And my sponsor is actually coming up on 10 years, and she's a true inspiration to me. I had my first spiritual awakening. You know, I always thought that, you know, all that stuff was ridiculous. The stories in the back of the books, I was like, there's no way that's true. Like, you're, you know, someone didn't come down and pull you away and talk to you. I never believed in that. I struggled with the spirituality thing. And whenever I had my first spiritual awakening, life did a 180. The glow, everything came to me. I, you know, have an amazing support group, and all my supports were sitting there telling me, you know, I can see the change in you, you know, your attitude, what you're doing, just everything was completely different. And that was an amazing thing to hear. My supports are what keeps me going. And I continued, you know, going to meetings and functions, and, you know, I'm only 84 days in right now. And I'm going to Utah this weekend for an NA convention. That's amazing. I mean, I got a secretary chair position. I spoke and got to share my story at my IOP. I'm speaking at my main campus. You know, it's amazing how much, whenever you put in the effort, how much you get back. And, you know, I always thought all this was ridiculous. You know, I was just like everybody else. But if you put in the effort, you will see it work for you. In active addiction, you know, the things I'm receiving right now, there's no way I would have got it back then. It's a crazy thing, and I absolutely love my clean time, you know. My cravings are, you know, they're still there. They're always going to be there. But in time, you know, they get further apart and they differentiate just little by little. What made me want to go to outpatient was there was this girl that I was really close with. You know, she was my best friend. She went to outpatient, and, you know, she was a real big inspiration to me. You know, she only had a few more days clean time than I did. But, you know, her attitude, just the way she carried herself, you know, it was something I wanted. And, you know, they say, you know, to get what someone else has, you have to put in the same work they did. And so I was like, okay, you know, she's going, I can do it too. So I went. And then from outpatient to sober living, you know, I always thought sober livings were absolutely insane. You know, never thought that would work. But, you know, someone once said to me, someone prayed for you to be here. Someone brought you here. And I instantly thought of my friend Bradley, who died. And that was when I turned everything around, and I realized, you know, if I'm not ready to do it for myself yet, you know, I can do it for him. I can make him proud. And I knew if I would have gone back to Texas, I would have fell back in my old life. And I decided that's not what I wanted to do, because I remember the look on Bradley's face the first time I ever smoked meth in front of him. And that's what keeps me going. It really does. What I hope to learn from my sponsor is how to have fun in a clean way, you know, because in my active addiction, you know, the only way I was going to have fun is if I had, you know, meth in my hand or in a beer in my hand. I don't know how to live life being clean. And with her experience, I know she can guide me in the right path and show me what to do and how to have fun clean, you know? Like, I've been going to pool parties, you know, without beer. And that's an insane thing to me. You know, like, I want exactly what she has. I want the glow that she has. I want the strength that she has. And the only way I'm gonna get it is to do the same work that she did. My future a few months ago was, you know, in my head, I always kept saying, you know, I don't want to be, you know, old and working in a bar. Like, once you're in the bar life, it's hard to get out. So, you know, I saw my future as going back to school, you know, but I knew I was never going to do that because the jobs that I wanted, you know, you had to be sober, you had to be clean. So I knew that wasn't going to happen. It was just a thought in my head. So basically my life was just, it was diminishing right in front of me, but I couldn't see it. It was spiraling right downhill, but, you know, that was oblivious to me. And, you know, I knew I was just going to continue down that path because I couldn't stop. You know, I could have ended up homeless. I could have ended up doing something I didn't want to do. Everyone's rock bottom is different, and mine could have gotten worse. And since I've been clean, I can actually see a future coming. Like, it's, you know, life is so clear now. You know, I have the motivation to go to school, you know, to get a job, like a new job in a different area. Like, it's amazing because I actually see things getting better for me. I see things changing.